With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, hello, and welcome, or should I say welcome back, to the Indie Football Podcast World Cup Daily Edition, where the World Cup is on fire. Miguel Delaney, true or false?
True. What a twist. Every night it's just this epic drama.
Two nights in a row, we've had absolutely brilliant finishes. And this is it. You've got simultaneous games going on. And tonight, really, the other game was kind of irrelevant, but what we still had was all of these possibilities open. We had all of these things that could happen and might happen and should happen, but didn't happen, then did happen. And in the end, what did happen was Argentina win against Nigeria, a late winner. What minute was it, 85?
Yeah, I think so.
85, it felt like 90 plus 2 from, of all people, Marcus Rojo, with a right-footed volley arriving late in the box, to hammer home. Absolutely incredible scenes at the St. Petersburg Stadium there. I'm sure incredible scenes in Argentina, where they were on the brink of absolute catastrophe and they've pulled it out of the fire. It means, in short, that Argentina go through in second place in that group. Croatia go through in first place. That's the top line of it.
And yeah, it doesn't tell us anything.
it barely scratches the surface of what on earth we've just witnessed. So, let's start from the beginning.
Messi.
Well, no, before the actual game starts. So, in accordance with Javier Mascherano, Lionel Messi, Sampaoli puts out a team that is a 4-3-3. The major change in goal, Franco Armani replaces Willy Caballero. It's a back four, the midfield three. Ever Banega comes in alongside Mascherano and Enzo Perez. And the front three of Di Maria, Higuain and Messi. How do you think the 4-3-3 looked compared to the last two games? We've seen different formations in both.
They were better at the start, but yet the game was so ridiculously chaotic that it's still a little bit hard to say. I mean, that ended up something of a real free for all. I mean, the amount of changes late on, I mean, Pavon has such a massive difference. Still think Argentina are pretty bad, and yet I wouldn't necessarily, you know, despite it, so much dysfunction, despite the fact that we still don't know, you know, their level or whether they have anything that works, just the kind of exhilaration that you never know what I could do against. What look, we were at the French Denmark game earlier, unfortunately, given what was happening in St. Petersburg. And, you know, things take life their own in the intensity of knockouts, as we saw in the intensity of what was effectively a knockout match in the group stage.
I think chaos is a perfect way to describe it. The game was all over the place. It was just mindless at times. I mean, Nigeria had absolutely no chill whatsoever. They were all over the shot. And you kind of felt that they could take advantage of that. They got the pace to hit a team on the counter-attack that has a slow defence like Argentina. Argentina deliberately sat deep with that back line that's so old and so questionable. And what we saw was, because they were doing that, their team got immensely stretched out. So there were just big spaces in the centre of the field, which led to this wild sort of to-ing and fro-ing. And early in the first half...
The one thing to be said, actually, in all that, Nigeria actually almost left the chaos of Argentina's play get to them, because a touch more composure, they could have done more to that what was really open Argentina backline, especially the chance that was before the Rojo VAR decision. I mean, you know, that was just one of many opportunities Nigeria had to do something, but they kind of let it go to their heads as much as Argentina did.
Yes, no, I think both sides showed signs of just mental capitulation today. But Nigeria, I think, if they'd just been a bit more calm, then that would have worried Argentina more, because Argentina would have been more concerned about them coming back out. Whereas in the last 10 or 15 minutes, Nigeria really just kind of sat back and waited really for things to happen, which wasn't the right way to go about it. So Argentina start okay, and they're doing all right, actually. They're passing the ball around nicely. Nigeria do look dangerous as well. And then Ever Banega, who had a good start to the game, he looked to have a lot more to him, obviously, mm-hmm. than Lucas Biglia or even Enzo Perez or anyone else who's played central midfield for Argentina so far this tournament. And then Banega picks out a wonderful sort of drilled sand wedge of a pass to Lionel Messi. And it's falling, you'd think, on his right foot.
Yeah.
But what actually happens is he takes a sublime, subtle touch on the outside of his left thigh. Before the ball can even hit the floor, he takes a touch with the top of his left boot just to cushion it. And then on his weaker right foot, he smashes it into the opposite corner of that, into the inside of the side netting. It was ludicrous.
Well, it's basically, it also, beyond the clutch nature of the goal and all that, it was probably, that's probably Messi's best, it summed up Messi's best ability, and, you know, showed at an extreme given the pressure and the difficulty. It's the minimalism of him, and yet the maximum effect. So, I mean, he takes as few touches as possible, but they efficiently get him exactly where he wants to go as quickly as possible. Usually he doesn't embellish, but this, the nature of this and the requirement here made it absolutely spectacular. I mean, even the second touch, which is probably, maybe you consider it the lesser touch, given how he cushioned it on his thigh initially, that's actually, if you start looking at it, that's an essential touch. It's almost a miracle he got the shot off, given the
angles and speed. It's exactly. The speed he's running as well. He's going at full speed.
Yeah.
And I think that the minimalist aspect of what you're talking about is perfect, because it's so compact. Everything Messi does is compact. Yeah. You know, he's not a guy for step overs and flailing legs. It's one of the reasons I like watching him dribble so much with Barcelona, is that he's more like a slalom skier, where it's about balance and shift of weight. And he does it at such a speed that no one can catch him. And you could be the defender with Messi running at you, and basically he leans one way or another and he just goes by you.
Yeah.
Whereas other players use skills. Like, you know, they use step-overs or kind of flip-flaps, like Ronaldinho sort of style. That's how he beats players, by deception, like, or Wilfried Zaha. Whereas Messi is all about balance and body control and leaning. And this was just a sensational kind of split second. It's so brief, that, and he's going so fast. And yet, what we see is just a phenomenal goal. I mean, that moment, at that point, Miguel, we're thinking Argentina up and running, and what's going to happen? Are they going to win by two? Are they going to win by three? Are they going to win by four? But it didn't really turn out like that.
No, because basically it's still a very dysfunctional team over Lionel Messi. They were better, but there was still an element of chaos to them. There's still a lot in the team that doesn't work. Mascherano is a problem, but then it's also a problem that they don't have another number five there. Di Maria probably shouldn't start again. Pavon has to start. Aguero has to start over Higuain. I mean, it's still, despite having scrambled through, it's still a team that doesn't really know its best self, and still looks some way off knowing its best self. But one thing they did figure out, I suppose, actually, Messi needs to be on the wing where he can play off people, so he can kind of, you know, he can have a multiple effect.
Yes, I do think that the slight movement of him into a wider role in the front three does help. As I said, I think after the other game, is if you have him as a 10, then what happens? As soon as the ball comes to him, he gets surrounded from every possible angle. Now, when you're that good, there are ways out of it, and he often does find his way out of these things. But then what happens is they just foul him, they clip him, they stop the ball. Messi isn't running with the ball any longer because they've got a free kick. Everyone gets behind the ball, and they start again. If he gets the ball in wide positions, you know, it's an ISO situation where it's one-on-one and maybe a second defender comes over, but then Messi's drawn two defenders out of place, and then Messi can either play the telling pass or he can beat the defenders. It brings so many more possibilities, I think. So I did think he was able to be more influential in that role. You know, you can't do what... It's kind of like what Christian Pavon said the other day about playing with Messi. He said that the problem with playing with Messi is the temptation to just give him the ball all the time and expect him to do something. Now, obviously, that's difficult. It's really difficult not to want to give him the ball. But you can't. And you absolutely can't. And overwhelmingly, you know, the style of player he is someone who can make things happen. And there were times today when it didn't look like Argentina had any other players who could make something happen.
Yeah, well, Pavon, as soon as I got Pavon on, really exposing Nigeria's the role of the Nigerian team, Mascherano. Mascherano really was that culpable for Argentina. But once he got Pavon on to go at the defence, it just opened up Nigeria. I mean, it gave them another problem to think about. Because with Messi on one side, Pavon on the other, a different type of problem because of his pace. And I suppose Aguero as well, you would think he has to start now.
The problem with Aguero is that he wasn't linking up. Him and Messi are very good friends and have known each other for forever. But they weren't linking up in the last two games. And Messi needs someone to play 1-2s with. He needs some people to link with. And that wasn't really going on, which I think why they went with Higuain. Higuain basically had his one big chance today, and as he does in big moments for Argentina, did not score it. How do we say it? The introduction of Pavon was so important for them because, as you say, it gave them another player who could create something out of nothing. Now, Benega, I have to say as well, obviously was making some incredible passes, and he has to start against France. But Pavon is a player who has speed and directness, and when you're playing your defence deep because you're so terrified of people getting in behind you, and against a French lineup which is going to have probably Giroud alongside Griezmann and Mbappe, you have to sit deep, right?
My fear for that game almost is that having the epic nature of these games and how good Argentina, that France just dourly expose their weakness and win 1-0 or whatever, and kind of just kill it, just subdue it all. But yeah, you're right. I think it's something that this tournament has emphasised, to be honest. It's a game for Sabella tactics, or Simeone tactics, you might say. Basically, with a defence as slow as that, and with a talent as good as Messi, why expose yourself? Just sit back, make it difficult for them, and release Messi and those around him when you can.
Well, Sabella's 5-3-2, where you just put everyone behind the ball, don't concede, and think, oh yeah, well, you know, the guy up front's pretty good and we're probably going to score. I do think there is a lot to that, especially when, you know, you can't defend with the players they've got back there now, so you just need to give them as much help as is humanly possible. So Argentina ahead, but it wasn't that good. And then, I mean, what do you make of the red card? I thought Kunat Kakir, who I don't rate as a referee anyway, no. I thought he had a poor game.
A lot of questions to be asked about him.
The cross comes in, basically. It's a cross, and it's deflected, and it goes up in the air.
Mm.
And Rocco, who would later be the hero,
heads
the ball. He does win the header, heads the ball clear, with only one striker there, so he has to make the header. But he heads it onto his own arm, and his arm is just in the air because he's jumped to make the header.
It's an awkward jump.
But then that's given as a penalty, reviewed, given as a penalty. That was the penalty, wasn't it? Or was it the Mascherano?
No, the penalty was Mascherano.
Right, so that was when Rafa was saying.
That it was, I didn't think it was a penalty, but I wouldn't have been surprised if that ref gave it.
Yeah, sorry. Mascherano's foul gave away the penalty, which Victor Moses scored. Then Nigeria were given a penalty, and then that was overturned.
The penalty, but Mascherano was the penalty was before Rojo.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so it was 1-1, wasn't it? Yeah, when they got the, because it looked like it was going to go 2-1 Nigeria.
Yeah.
That does get overturned, so it's 1-1, and at that point you've got, say, half an hour to really, or if at less than that, it's about, you know, 40 odd minutes to make something happen, to try and do anything you can to get this goal you need. Croatia went 1-0 up in the game against Iceland. Iceland eventually equalised, but then Croatia scored to make it 2-1. But that game was irrelevant, because it was, if Argentina win here, they can get it. And they brought on Pavon, who we said, and he did make them better. They brought in on Maxi Meza, and he did not do anything to make Argentina better. And he's shown, he's played in every game so far.
I'm amazed he's getting into the team.
And he's played in every game so far, and he has not yet shown once that he's good enough to play at this level.
Yeah, I'm amazed he's getting into the team. And there's a few players like that with Argentina still, which kind of sums up their issues, which is why they need some decisiveness. I mean, this is, I suppose this is another, yet another strand out of the game. And what was Sampaoli's role in all this? How many of the decisions were his? How strong was he? I mean, it was interesting. What I think, from what we've seen, he was out on the bench while Messi was basically giving a team talk at halftime.
Yeah, well, Messi was giving a team talk in the tunnel, and Sampaoli's out on the bench. Now, presumably Sampaoli did go into the dressing rooms at halftime, but there were some suggestions that he didn't. We'll clear that up. But I just think if you're bringing on Meza, when even when you have Giovanni Lo Celso on the bench, who's like one of the best young playmakers in Europe,
yeah,
and you're going with Meza instead, you've got Paulo Dybala and you're going with Meza instead, whoever's making that call, whoever's making that decision, spoiler, they're making the wrong decision. So there we go, Argentina making some changes, and then eventually Aguero gets tossed on for Tagliafico, the left back. So that is pure desperation. At this point, you're in all sorts of trouble. You are heading out of the World Cup. This could be like one of the worst 10 minutes of your life as an Argentina player. And it gets to the last 15, and it gets to the last 10. That's when Higuain fired over that glorious chance that he had. And then Argentina attacked down the right, a cross is swung over. And arriving, of all people, as we said, is Marcus Rojo with a right-footed volley that gets hammered home.
What a finish.
It's a sensational finish from him. And it's also their first shot on target in the entire second half.
Yeah.
But Argentina go 2-1 up. And from there on, they did... My concern then is, are they going to have the professionalism and solidity to see this out?
It would have been very easy for them to give up a goal so soon afterwards. You could well have seen that.
But they do. They do hold on. And the celebrations on the field, absolutely wild from the players. That looked like far more than a group game to them. That was the salvation of a generation of players, you know. A lot of these players are not going to be playing for Argentina at the next World Cup. You can say that for sure.
I mean, also on that, it's not what they'd want, but to go out to France is a lot more respectable how you sell the tournament, even though it could be a disaster anyway. But it's still more respectable going out in the group stage. So at least they've prevented utter humiliation.
You have to worry what this defence is going to be like against France. And while we're there, I guess we do have to talk about France, Miguel, because it's France-Argentina. It sounds like a thriller, but we were at France-Denmark today, and it was the first 0-0 of the entire tournament. That group ends up, because Peru beat Australia today, Australia blew their chance. So France and Denmark played out a pathetic 0-0 draw that doesn't deserve any time on the podcast, so it's really not going to get much time on the podcast. But the main concern, I guess, going forward, I mean, Denmark played Croatia, which is kind of an interesting meeting of two kind of second-tier sides that could surprise. Obviously, one of those teams in the quarterfinals will be good, and I think that, for me, Croatia looked the better side of those two. But the big story, I think, coming away from it, we both wrote about the disappointment of France.
Deschamps, yeah. I think as Jack actually tweeted, it wasn't at the game, it was at the Argentina game, but Jack tweeted, it's amazing how in the 2 years since Euro 2016 and that failure in the final, and that did expose so many issues with Deschamps, so many problems he has, so many of France's players have gotten better, and yet the team seems to have got worse. I mean, 3 goals in a group stage, they've got through, but it's not convincing.
And it wasn't, Australia and Peru isn't a strong group. I think if you're looking at this France team, I think after 2014 they could have considered replacing Deschamps.
They should. It's amazing they haven't.
After 2016, I appreciate you got to the final, but they basically, this is his third tournament, might even be his fourth one. Was he at 2012?
No, it was Blanc.
It was Blanc, was it? I thought it was. So this is his third tournament, and I was looking through it. They basically got one good result in those three tournaments, and that was they beat Germany 2-0 in the semi-final at Marseille in a home tournament. Griezmann scored both goals, but their record under him is pretty poor. I've been at France games at both of the last, I think I've been at two at each of the last two tournaments, and I still don't get Deschamps, and I still don't think he's capable of getting the most out of these players. And all you want from a coach is someone who's going to make the players more than the sum of their parts. That's making the team into something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, you know, with this France team, it's so good, it's so rich in quality, that if you made them, you know, just play as good as they are,
yeah,
then they're going to be something special.
But he doesn't know how to put it. Like, I mean, there's so many players just out of place or out of position. They're in roles that just aren't suited to them, which means they can't link up with other players as well. It's all just a bit broken. But they're kind of, I mean, the amazing thing about them is that that is their only storyline, but they've still kind of steadily gone through. And you do wonder whether how far that will carry them. It could well, in a tournament like this, it could well carry them quite far. Just that kind of relative dourness.
Which would be a shame.
After a group stage as epic as this, and hopefully that will continue through the knockouts, but it feels like it needs a more attacking winner than a side like France.
So we've got France-Argentina. The winner of that game will play the winner of Portugal-Uruguay. You could say that all four of those teams have underwhelmed, but they do all have the potential to be absolute blockbuster clashes. So for me, that's kind of, I think, what we want at the World Cup. As we said, Croatia-Denmark will be the other one that was confirmed tonight. And I guess for those two teams, it's a chance to show that you deserve to be among the traditional big boys. Croatia, as I said, my favourites. And then I'd need to double check exactly who the winner of that would play.
They play Spain.
They play Spain.
Spain-Russia.
Spain-Russia. So you expect Spain to go through, then Spain versus Croatia. Spain-Croatia played at Euro 2016, did they not?
Yeah, Spain were on top for about 70 minutes of that game and then blew it. I know it was just a De Gea error, actually, which is something maybe to discuss tomorrow. That's going to be an interesting battle in midfield. Should they get that far, of course.
Yes, of course. So, where was I? Sorry, my phone, two phones are ringing. One is Critch and one is Johnny. So, first, Critch, you got one line. Tell us what you thought of that.
Yeah, a totally manic game.
And Johnny and Jack have sent over their dispatch from St. Petersburg, which I will drop in just here.
Well, me and Jack hit Brooker on the way back from the Krestovsky Stadium. Argentina 2, Nigeria 1, as I'm sure you've heard. Absolutely cracking atmosphere, absolutely cracking finish. And Jack, what do you think the significance of that goal by Marcus Rojo right at the end was?
Well, massively significant for the very obvious reason that it kept Argentina in the World Cup. I mean, I certainly didn't think before they scored that they were going to score, because I thought they were terrible in that second half. They didn't really create anything. They looked scared. They looked more likely to concede than to score. They should have conceded a penalty. They let Nigeria have some other good chances. I mean, it wasn't very different from the second half against Iceland and even the second half against Croatia. So I thought they were in a mess at that point. But when they scored, basically the whole game felt like a knockout game. Like, it effectively was a knockout game, but it felt like a quarter final or something. The way everyone charged on the pitch at the end, and Higuain and Di Maria were in tears and lots of the fans were crying. Like, it was an incredibly emotionally draining game to watch, never mind to play in or be a fan of. And yet Argentina is still here.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's hard to process, really. It's one of those games where you come down from your seat in the press box, and, you know, you go back to the press room, whatever, and press conference, and then like 30-40 minutes later, I noticed that my heart was basically still racing. It was still kind of elevated, and I needed to, you know, take a couple of deep breaths. As for Argentina, we've seen so many of their flaws. We've seen almost kind of a player revolt, and we've seen them basically scrape through a group that they were expected to walk. I mean, at this moment, which is more significant? The fact that they have so many flaws and so many divisions, or the fact that they've overcome them?
That's a good question. I certainly came away from that game thinking it was more bad than good. Like, even though they won, I think clearly so far the flaws have been more evident than the good side. That said, there's always the danger that that will reverse in the knockout rounds. There's no reason they can't beat France in the last 16. France have been terrible so far. Yeah, but they scored probably the goal of the tournament. I think that was the best goal I've seen this tournament. The Messi goal. Like, I mean, if you're listening to this, you will definitely have seen it. But to run at high speed and then, you know, left thigh, left boot, right boot, while running in behind a defender, swerving away from the goalkeeper, putting it across the goalkeeper with your weaker foot. I mean, technically, it was as good. I mean, we won't see a better goal all tournament. And if you can do that, and you've got to play, and it's not, and it wasn't a fluke, because, you know, we've seen Messi do that a million times. If you can do that, you can beat anyone. And I think that if they can just iron out all the bad stuff, then of course they can go further in the competition.
Yeah, I mean, there's a parallel here with Portugal at the Euros 2 years ago, where a really quite limited team with one amazing player just sort of blundered their way through the tournament and ended up winning it, obviously with a much, much easier draw. And the fact that it's France next means they're really going to have to step up a level. How do you see that matchup? Because these are two teams that neither of whom have really been firing at all cylinders yet. Who do you think's got the edge, and where do you think the game will be won and lost, and you know, how do you see it happening?
I guess the two big questions really are, can Argentina play with more unity and solidity than they have done so far? Because they've been a mess. Like, they've been so disorganised in all their games. Even today, they were quite well organised the first half. And then, as soon as the second half came back, they completely collapsed. Like, the Mascherano gave away the penalty. He looked lost. I mean, the thing about Mascherano is that's what you get when you pick someone who plays for Hebei China Fortune. Like, he's obviously, his legs have gone. He looks like he's not played a proper game in months. So question one is, can Argentina play properly, or is it just to be messy? And the question two is, can France hit another level as well? Like, France are obviously playing miles than themselves. They've got even worse since Euro 2016, even though their squad's got better. Like, yeah, if France turn it on and Argentina a mess, then France could win that game 3-0, but I don't know, I just have kind of a sort of gut level feeling at the moment. We're going to turn left here.
No, we're going to go straight through there.
Okay, straight through. I've got this kind of gut feeling that Argentina will raise their game for the big occasion, or certainly the one key player will. And if the other guys can just do enough around him, then I think France are going to be the ones with some questions to answer. What do you think?
My take is that when you've got two such disjointed teams with such incredible individuals, it's such a hard one to call, because any one of those individuals could win the game, and it'll be one of those games, I think, where it'll be quite broken. There'll be spells of pressure, like at either end, and ultimately it will come down to who sort of makes those spells of pressure count. And it might even, you know, go against the run of play. You could get Argentina battering them for an hour and Kylian Mbappe does something incredible, or vice versa with Lionel Messi. And it's one of the, you know, I think it's going to be one of the games of the tournament, and that's you know, one thing I'm really looking forward to. Can either of them win it?
I think they can, because I don't think the bar is high. I mean, I think the best team so far has been Spain, but even then, Spain were very unconvincing. I mean, pretty unconvincing in all three of their games in spells. I just think they've got I think they're the likeliest to keep playing at the highest level. But beyond that, you're looking at, you know, a kind of very flimsy Brazil team, an untested England team, a Germany team who are within an inch, you know, who needed Toni Kroos to pull them out of the fire the other day. So I think there's not really a runaway favourite at all. And that means that if France or Argentina can get their shit together, then I think it's completely plausible that either of them could win it.
I would put Belgium amongst the top four favourites at the moment. Not just because of the way they won their two games, and the fact that they'll rest players and quite clearly are going to throw the England game in order to get an easier half of the draw, but the fact that the draw opens up so nicely for them if they do finish second in the group. They could play Mexico in the quarters, and, you know, then suddenly they're in a semi-final without really having faced a big test.
And Croatia. Croatia have maybe been one of the most consistent team here so far.
Yeah, Croatia have definitely been one of the better teams. Definitely one of the best teams of this tournament so far. That whole you know, Modric Eriksen duel in the second round against Denmark is going to be one to really watch out for. Anything else?
Yeah, I was at Repino today for England's media activity before we all fly to Kaliningrad on Wednesday morning. I spoke to Gary Cahill, who was good. He talked again about the importance of momentum, how simply the fact that England won their first game here, which of course they didn't do in 2014 or 2016, gives this tournament a different feel from anything that he's used to. He said that he expects there to be big change, or he said there expect to be changes. The more I think about it, the more I think England will go in the direction of changes. As much as we like to talk about how it's important to win the group and keep that momentum going, I think when you hear Southgate talk about including the rest of the squad and keeping everyone happy and getting minutes into players he might need later on, that makes you think that it's going to be more like perhaps half the team changing rather than two or three.
It's going to be quite a few days as the group stage is shake out and then we move into the knockouts. I honestly think it's come alive, you know, in the last week or so. Anyway, that's enough of our blathering. Back to the studio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So I think that's about it for another sensational evening of football. This is the thing with the World Cup, and the Champions League obviously does have its epic moments, and it is the top of football, the elite of football. But when you're getting this night after night.
There's that element of the World Cup because of the kind of first of all, the intensity of the schedule allied to the intensity of the feeling. I mean, ultimately, it does just, the fact it's your kind of nation and the fact it's a competition every 4 years, it does bring out this deeper level of emotion and desire in players almost.
Yeah, it was it was just extraordinary. I think if the tournament can go on like this, it's obviously great. The early kickoffs can buck up their ideas. Today's was, as we said, an absolutely dreary encounter between France and Denmark, and yesterday's early games weren't so good. But tomorrow, there is some more interest. I will be at Brazil Serbia. We discussed all the permutations already this week, so if you're after the kind of working out who's going to do what and stuff, the points in the group, then please go back and listen to that, because I'm not going to explain it again at this time of night. But Serbia Brazil is tomorrow night, Switzerland Costa Rica at the same time, and I think we're expecting Brazil to step up further. Neymar is fully fit, we've been told. They have got one important part of their squad injured, a thigh injury sustained celebrating the goal, Coutinho's winning goal the other day. That is coach Tite, but he will be fit to be on the bench, they said. And the early games are South Korea, Germany and Mexico, Sweden. We are assuming, Miguel, that Mexico will be able to get a point against the Swedes.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. And I think they'll top the group.
So that would make Brazil-Germany round of 16 games. So I'll just confirm to you, what we've got the first four round of 16 games confirmed. France will play Argentina in Kazan. Uruguay will play Portugal in Sochi. Then the winner of those two will play each other. Spain will play Russia at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow. Croatia will play Denmark in Nizhny Novgorod. To be confirmed, but the rest of the draw we're expecting it to be Brazil versus Germany in Samara, England or Belgium to play Poland, to play Japan, Senegal or Colombia. Mexico will play Switzerland, and then Belgium or England will play Japan, Senegal or Colombia. So there's a lot more to be resolved in that second half of the draw, and you'll hear about it, of course, on the Indie Football Podcast. You can read about it on independent.co.uk/football, as ever, and followed by the usual means. Just a short podcast today, but it apparently is what the listeners want. So thank you for listening, as ever. I hope you enjoyed as much as we did watching the football tonight. And we'll be in touch tomorrow with more, hopefully, epic World Cup action. Until then, goodbye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.